Hello everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, Geek Show's dedicated comics and manga podcast. I'm your host, Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Mick.
Hello!
And Rob.
Hello!
So, how are we doing today, guys?
Fantastic. It's way too hot, but it's okay because I did man things over this week and managed to replace my broken shower.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that, because this being a comics podcast, you saying you did man things could be confusing.
Yes, there's no big swampy monsters in the world, I take it.
No.
Giant-sized otherwise.
I didn't do man thing. I just did man space things.
That is how you spell man thing.
But you usually use capitals because it's a proper noun.
Anyway. As for the show, this week we are not in fact talking about man thing. Well, I mean, I guess we are talking about a man and a thing.
Yeah, true.
Oh, I see what you've done there.
This week's topic is going to be Venom, who I am, of course, obligated to say is going to get him.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a ceremonial part of the conversation now.
It never gets better, does it?
No.
With repeated saying, it never gets better.
See, he said it's a ceremonial thing. Now I'm just imagining Andrew in front of an altar with, like, a big hat going, Venom, he will get them.
Verily, he is going to get them.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, this week we are going to be kind of talking through some Venom comics. Also, I feel like as I was kind of doing the notes for this show, I realised basically what I've done is just made, like, a Venom timeline.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So yeah, so it's initially a bit awkward because Venom is one of those characters where it's a bit tough to say, like, where do you start?
Yeah.
If we want to be really technical about it, Venom first appears in the comic book event Secret Wars when Spider-Man gets his new black costume. Or do you say kind of the origin of Venom is Amazing Spider-Man 252, which is the point at which Spider-Man realizes that his costume is in fact sentient and evil.
I mean, we've all had days like that, right?
Yeah, everyone's had an evil pants day.
Yeah, those damn evil pants that have definitely shrunk a couple of sizes in the wash.
Yes.
But I think, like, the origin of Venom, like, as a character, you would say is Amazing Spider-Man issues 298 to 300, although really more 300 than the first two, written by David Michelinie, art by Todd McFarlane. And do you want to know the interesting thing about that story?
Go on, tell us the interesting thing.
It's that we're not going to talk about it, because actually it's pretty much all the events of that story are also covered in the 2008 miniseries Venom Dark Origin.
Yeah.
And that's where we're starting.
That's good, because that's something I definitely read this week.
I think I covered the Venom Dark Origin quite recently on 4Panel, didn't I? Because it was re-released.
You might have done. I did certainly remember it being talked about fairly recently.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like our conversations for the show are strictly 100% topical all the time.
True, this is true.
Or indeed, ever.
Anyway, this miniseries is from 2008. It's written by Zeb Wells, and it's got art by Angel Medina. And it's basically kind of an extended version of what you get in Amazing Spider-Man 300, where we meet Eddie Brock. We go through his whole life. We have his upbringing under a, I think it's implied, abusive father, like they never really outright say it.
Yeah.
And kind of follows him as he grows up, becomes a journalist, eventually gets involved in this big Sin Eater case, which is about a serial killer stalking the streets of New York.
It's a bit like Zodiac, isn't it?
The actual Zodiac killer, he was like the 70s, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So yes, I think the original Sin Eater story was inspired by the Zodiac Killer. Anyway, basically Eddie misidentifies who the killer is and that ends up costing him his journalism career. And by it, I of course mean that damn Spider-Man, because it's all his fault for catching the real Sin Eater.
Yeah.
Also, I realise Sin Eater sounds like Sin Eater.
Yeah, I was just waiting for the Boys, Boys, Boys reference.
That was Sabrina. 80s DJ, it was Sabrina.
Was it? Boys, 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 I'm looking for a good time. Boys, Boys, Boys. I thought that was Sin Eater.
Big Red GTO.
That was Sin Eater as well.
And Toy Boy was Sin Eater.
Oh, Toy Boy was Sin Eater, sorry, yeah.
Right, Andrew, drag the cream and screaming back to 2020.
Yeah, so Eddie Brock hits a bit of a low patch, but luckily, you know, meets a certain special someone that drags him out of it. And by special someone, I mean alien gloopy symbiote. They emerge, become Venom, the chompiest boy. And from there, the rest is history.
Very complicated history.
It is indeed. But what did we think of Venom Dark Origins? Or Origin, even, singular?
I like it, but the artwork, I found some bits of it decidedly creepy, especially when it does the whole, you know, when he finds the cat and he does that smile, you know, it was easy.
Yeah, and basically to fill in the cat that one of the neighborhood girls had lost, and he had in fact been keeping just in his basement so that he could return it to her to be the big hero.
Yeah, and he was wearing his,
and that's like,
you know, he was wearing his best clothing when he did that as well, so he could make an impact.
Yeah, and I think that was a really good scene as well, just like in terms of establishing what's up with the character. I think it did a very good job.
Oh yeah, the bit where him and that lass get attacked and then Spider-Man saves them, and then the lass wakes up and she goes, "How do you do it, Eddie?" And he goes, "It was easy." And it's the same smile all over again.
But
I did find the art was kind of like quite cartoony in places as well, and a bit weird. Yeah.
There were some frames where I felt Eddie looked more than a little bit like the guy off the cover of Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially like when he was a kid and he's got like that same ridiculously giant head.
Yep. Yeah. Which would put a whole different spin on Mad Magazine, it has to be said.
Yeah.
I feel like that is one of the big problems in comics, though, is that when you are drawing a child, you either get weird Mad Magazine cartoon or just small adult.
Yeah.
But no, it's a good story. I liked the ending, like, despite it being very comic booky, just the idea of like Venom having Spider-Man tied up inside a church bell and trying to crush him with the bongy bit.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners are is it chorister? That's the term.
Campanologists.
Yeah, if you're a campanologist, please do tell me what the bongy bit is.
Isn't it called a clapper?
I was about to say, it's called a clapper, isn't it?
Could be.
Things I never thought I'd do during an episode of Four Panel, Look Up, Anatomy of a Bell. It is indeed the clapper on none of the diagrams of a bell that I have just called up from the interwebs. Does it get referred to as the dongy bit?
No, the bongy bit.
Hey.
Or the bongy bit.
Yes. Sorry, the bongy bit, as in the bit belonging to classic comic supervillain Dr. Bong.
I thought Dr. Bong was a bit too chill to be a supervillain.
I don't know what you're talking about, Rob. This is a clean podcast for clean teens. And homicidal symbiotes who are also in love with their former partner.
Yeah.
That was a fun bit at the end as well, where Eddie's kind of like trapped in the tube and the symbiote's like rising off him in a big like venomy cloud.
Yeah. I did like Dark Origin. I felt it told a more complete story than the original, was it 1963? When they did the whole Eddie Brock becoming Venom?
Oh, no, Rob, no.
I can't remember.
Venom, that was like, it was 1988, the original 1980? Venom storyline.
Oh, right. I was thinking it was 80s, because I remember it being a thing, and all my comic reading buddies at the time were very excited about Venom. They were completely heedless of the fact that he was, in fact, going to get him.
I mean, it was a simpler time back then, wasn't it?
True.
It was, yeah.
True.
Anyway, can you imagine going back to 1988 and explaining to someone, having just read Amazing Spider-Man 300, about the Venom movie?
Well, while you're sat there listening to Sunita's cover version of Boys, Boys, Boys.
Do you know why I thought 1963 is? You know when you put the reading list in the chat, you referred to Spider-Man and you put 1963 in brackets, which is where I got that from.
Oh, right, yeah, because that's kind of how the series listing was. Because that is the date that Amazing Spider-Man first started.
Yeah. That's why that date was in my head.
Also, can you imagine a movie of Venom coming out in 1988?
Oh, God, no. No, no. You do know.
Using only practical effects.
Oh, it's going to be the Toxic Avenger all over again, isn't it?
I mean, unless we ended up with, like, John Carpenter's The Venom.
Which, weirdly, I would see that. I would watch John Carpenter's version of Venom.
I mean, yeah, I feel like that's a not controversial opinion. Anyway, back to Venom comics. So, after that, kind of moving on timeline-wise, we get sort of two stories that, in my mind, I like to refer to them as the next two parts of the Venom trilogy. And those are Amazing Spider-Man issues 315 to 317, The Return of Venom from 1989, and issues 346 and 347, Venom Wins from 1991. And both these are written by David Michelinie. The first one's got art by Todd McFarlane again, second by Eric Larson. And something I think is quite fun with the art of these ones is if you compare them to kind of the original storyline, you can see Venom kind of develop visually.
Hmm.
So like in that first storyline, he's just basically muscular Spider-Man with a mouth. Then in the second one, he's got kind of more like claws and more pointed teeth. And then by the third one, he's just full on like 7 feet tall, jaw the size of a small canyon, tongue flailing everywhere, slobber going all about the place.
Eric Larson's Savage Dragon, isn't he?
He is indeed Savage Dragon. But yeah, before that he did a... He worked at Marvel as an artist,
yeah.
Then was one of that lot that went on to found Image, I believe.
Yeah. I thought that name sounded familiar.
Along with Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. Whose name also sounds familiar.
Yes, weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
I know.
Todd McFarlane helped invent Venom. And then went to Image and started writing about a black-suited, morally ambiguous character with lots of flaily tentacle things and occasionally big chompy jaws.
Yeah.
But Spawn has a cape, so he's a different character.
I was about to say, you can tell the difference. One has a cape, the other doesn't.
Anyway, so what I like about these two stories is I think they're kind of altogether what established Venom as one of Spider-Man's like best villains. Because it's the idea of like this basically yearly storyline where Venom just like he comes back again and again.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, kind of very much like the Terminator, where it's just Spider-Man kind of on the run, no idea how he's gonna stop him, and always having to like figure out new ways to get around him. Because I feel like that's one of the issues you get with later Venom stories, is they rely very much on this idea that, oh, he's Venom, he doesn't like loud noises and fire, so we'll just do that. But like, first time round, Spider-Man, you know, he does use kind of like a sonic blaster to defeat him. But then second time round, Venom basically like gets a drop on him. They have to fight in this, I think it's like an old logging facility or something. And so Spider-Man's like, oh no, I've got like none of the sonic or the fire things I can use. So he does. And it's actually quite funny because this is something that the end of Dark Origin sets up as well. Is he used the fact that the symbiote still wants to be with him.
Mm.
So he basically just says, okay, I give in. You can join back up with me. But because it's still kind of bonded to Eddie as well, gives it a bit of a overload and just knocks them both out.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I liked about how they changed the symbiote to basically add a degree of intelligence to it. It wasn't simply this goop that just relied on its instincts. Because I think, you know, very early on when they first introduced it in Secret Wars, wasn't it just kind of a goop that just happened to work, but they didn't actually give it any thought or anything?
Oh, yeah. Well, like, initially it was just goo.
Yeah.
Then I think it was evil goo. And then, like, they kind of made it sentient, quite pissed off goop.
Emotional, I'd say. Emotional. Yeah.
Spurned, I think, kind of spurned lover is very much the vibe they want to go for.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of makes it not surprising that originally Venom was actually supposed to be a woman. Like, that was the original concept for the character.
Yeah.
Before some of the editorial at Marvel. And I think the idea was it was kind of like a little bit of a... They don't like the image of Spider-Man, you know, beating up a girl.
Yeah.
And B, this kind of self-sustaining feedback loop of, well, we shouldn't make her a female villain because Spider-Man doesn't have female villains. But then, of course, Spider-Man doesn't have good female villains because you don't make any female villains for him to fight because he doesn't have any good female villains. So you don't make him any good female villains to fight. So he doesn't have any good female villains.
But then you're going to get...
I mean, it's very much comics publishing logic, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But then you're going to get the people going, Black Cat's a villain. You're like, is she?
You mean Poundland Catwoman?
Yeah. She's a villain.
I mean, to be fair, for a while she was also Poundland Kingpin.
Yeah.
That wasn't a very good storyline.
Oh, God. I'm just imagining Black Cat cosplaying as Kingpin. You know, on those bald caps on.
On one of those inflatable sumo suits. Yeah.
I would read that comic.
What was up off Kingpin's master plan? Tell me, Spider-Man, how can you stop me when you can't even tell which one is the real me? Anyway, Venom wins is like a fun ending. It's basically Spider-Man like kind of finally realizes the trick with Venom, which is that like he's not a conventional supervillain. He doesn't want to take over the world. All he wants to do is kill Spider-Man. So he just fakes his death.
Yeah.
Just, like, sticks his costume on a skeleton, buggers off on a boat, and then literally it just ends with Eddie going, well, Spider-Man's dead, may as well chill out on an island for a while. And then we reach the mid-90s.
Yeah.
So this is what I think is known as the Lethal Protector era.
Yes, yes it is.
Where Venom suffered the curse of all cool comics characters. He got popular.
I thought you were going to go with pouches. Yeah, popular works.
I was going to berate you for the idea of Venom with pouches, but hold on to that thought for a while. So I think the issue, though, is that Venom, as we've seen from like the first few stories on this list, not actually, you know, that heroic a character.
No.
He's a vengeance-driven symbiote wrapped around a pathological liar.
Who isn't averse to eating things?
Well, in the end, at the heart of it all, aren't we all?
Yeah, but Venom's more of a goat in that he'll chew on anything.
Yeah, that brings us on to probably the dumbest part of the Lethal Protector storyline, which is, hey, do you know Venom's insatiable bloodlust?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it can actually be controlled if you just feed the symbiote chocolate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's how you make your alien serial killer a marketable kids character.
See, when I read that, I just thought, hang on, chocolate, bloodlust, will this work on vampires? Is this some secret vampire technique that no one's told us about?
No, vampires just have to paint things red and give it to them.
Can you imagine, though, approaching Dracula with a dairy milk?
You'd have to have it sharpened at one end, though.
Or just have two that you kind of hold together as a cross.
Until they melt from your sweaty palms.
Oh, just, it's working, it's working. Dracula's being repelled. We can finally chomp. Oh, no. Actually, I feel like that does actually work as like a dairy milk advert, though.
Yeah, it does.
You don't just have some kind of dairy milk. It's irresistible. Anyway, yeah, so the thing about this era of Venom is that he's in like lots of different miniseries, and So, I mean, some of them might be good. It's just, it's a lot to troll through.
Oh.
And a lot of it is very mediocre 90s comics.
Yeah.
Are you basically saying that Venom is the Kate Jackson of 90s comics?
No, there were others who could also fit that mold.
Anyway, I did decide to choose one of the miniseries, though, kind of for the list. And I have gone for 1994's Venom Separation Anxiety, which was written by Howard Mackey with art by Ron Randall.
Yeah, and I think you did that without adequate warning.
Yeah, look, I'll admit, I forgot how much of like the Life Foundation stuff was not from that miniseries.
I kind of started reading it, and it turned out that Venom had rejoined a group called Take That, featuring other symbiotes.
Was one of them the Gary Barlow symbiote?
What I'd missed was the whole, you know, Venom splits from Take That era.
Actually, it works, because you've got Venom, who's the one who, like, with the breakaway career.
Yeah.
You've got Scream, which is the one who people, like, know her name. And then you've got the others, who are just the other ones.
Now I really do just want a comic with a Gary Barlow symbiote.
I can't wait for Planet of the Symbiotes 2, Never Forget Where You're Coming From. Anyway, to fill in the gaps then. So, I think it was during the original Lethal Protector miniseries, Venom gets kidnapped by a group called the Life Foundation, as seen in the hit film Venom. And as part of that, they kind of make copies of his symbiotes and give them to a bunch of, I believe, fresh teens with attitude.
Yeah. That was what all comic books were aiming for during the 90s.
And yeah, anyway, Venom escapes, Life Foundation, who cares? Other symbiotes escape. Let's see if I can name the symbiotes. There's definitely Scream, who is the red and yellow one.
Yeah.
Then there's...
Hold on, have you got them confused with Power Rangers?
I mean, I think Marvel have. I definitely have. There's the grey one, who I think is called Riot.
There is a Riot.
And, yeah, and he was the one who was the villain in the Venom movie. Then there's the green one, who I think is Lasher, because he's got, like, whippy tentacle things. There's the purple one, who I want to call Fade or Phase.
Phage.
Or Phage. And the yellow one, who I know definitely for a fact, is named Carl.
I think the yellow one was Agony and the purple one was Phage.
I don't care. I choose to believe the Venom Separation Anxiety canon, where one of them's called Carl, and that's just his name.
Carl's just the name he uses while he's his nefarious tasks of answering letters in a weekly column in the Daily Bugle.
I'll go for a drink at Moe's Tavern with his best friend, Lenny.
Anyway, Separation Anxiety. I would say it's still quite a cheesy, very 90s comic book. But I think it is important in that that's like the first time you get Eddie Brock starting to consider that maybe the symbiote isn't, you know, such a great thing, after he witnesses all the Life Foundation symbiotes kind of go a bit nuts and try and kill each other. That's basically a point that's going to be Eddie Brock's direction for a good long time. It's just coming to realize that symbiotes, like, they are actually bad and potentially evil and need to be taken care of.
Yep.
Was there another Life Foundation symbiote?
I think that was it, wasn't it?
Riot, Lasher, Scream, Agony, Phage.
Man, they are like Take That, where I've just got no idea how many of them there are. Like, you'll be watching them perform, and I swear they have an extra guy who occasionally comes out, dances around, and then just disappears into the background again.
Wouldn't it be funny if these were symbiotes that could only attack on a key change as well?
Oh God, it is Power Rangers, isn't it? It is, because I mean, didn't that happen in Power Rangers all the time? The Black Ranger would suddenly appear and help them and then disappear again, and nobody knew who he was.
Separation Anxiety was also adapted as a video game, only it wasn't.
Yeah, I can understand that. I feel like even for a video game, this plot is a bit hard to follow.
Yeah.
The thing is, they stole the title, Separation Anxiety, and actually made a video game of Lethal Protector.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's video games and comics through and through, isn't it? Also, what I did like in Separation Anxiety is the bits where, like, the symbiote's just being held by its own, and it kind of escapes, and just starts kind of like Metal Gear soliding about, just like drooping down from the rafters, picking guys up, possessing random truckers, and getting into brawls.
Yeah, because it's just trying to find Eddie, isn't it? Initially.
It is, which... I mean, I think that's, you know, that's like the genuinely good thing, is it's a bit tragic that, like, you go from the symbiote, who all it cares about is finding Eddie and getting back together with him, and Eddie, who's very much, oh no, wait, symbiotes are evil.
I'm so over this relationship.
Yeah. Only to find out he's got a kid.
Yeah, you know, it's a good thing that Separation Anxiety was written in the 90s. Otherwise, you'd probably get a bit where, like, the symbiote's slithering about. And it suddenly checks, like, a random goon's phone to see that Eddie's changed his status to "it's complicated."
We've talked a lot about Eddie with the symbiote, but he's not the only one, is he?
Indeed he isn't. So that does kind of bring us to a quick pit stop with Marvel Knights Spider-Man from 2004, which just... It's not a great series. It's written by Mark Millar. That's probably all I need to say.
Yeah.
But it does have kind of quite a big storyline for Eddie Brock, in which he finds out that he has cancer and that the symbiote is at least partially the cause for it. And so he decides to just auction Venom off to kind of the highest bidder. And eventually it finds its way to Mac Gargan, a.k.a. the Scorpion. And that was... As much as like the storyline itself isn't great, I always thought that was kind of a neat idea. If you've got like Venom and the Scorpion, who at this point they were both like kind of relegated to B-list villains, and by kind of combining them, you suddenly got like a much more intimidating villain.
Yeah,
because Matt Gargan is basically Venom without any of the morals, and then I think so. The story I have selected is kind of. A good Matt Gargan and a good Eddie Brock story is Amazing Spider-Man issues 568 to 573, New Ways to Die from 2008. And this was written by Dan Slott with art by John Romita Jr. And this story is just really good. It's probably up there as one of my favorite Spider-Man stories. Basically, it's coming at a time where Norman Osborn. He was in charge of the Thunderbolts, which are kind of basically supervillains who work for the government in return for kind of commuted sentences.
Basically Marvel's Suicide Squad.
Marvel's Suicide Squad, yeah.
No, they're the Death Team. But yes, they are very deliberately Marvel's Suicide Squad. And one of the members of those is, of course, Venom. Just
so he's government sanctioned to go and get him.
Exactly.
Wow.
He has a permit. And I think basically what sums up Matt Gargan as Venom is that he's here to kick ass and eat people, and actually he can do both those things at the same time.
I was going to say, is he all out of people?
No, he's never out of people. And yeah, and kind of the other side of that story is that Eddie Brock himself, he gets kind of miraculously cured of his cancer by philanthropist Martin Lee, who anyone who's played the Spider-Man video game knows is actually Mr. Negative.
Mm.
And so because of that, instead of just being not Venom anymore, Eddie is then turned into Anti-Venom, which is one of those... It's a really, really stupid concept.
Yep.
But that, I love it. And I think it helps.
Venom is a symbiote that bonds with a host and goes off to satiate its own bloodlust.
Yeah.
So what does anti-venom do?
Anti-venom is here to cure you to death.
Yeah. And then go home and take care of Uncle Venom.
I really thought we were going to get through this entire podcast without Uncle Venom joke.
Yeah. Not going to happen.
I should have known better.
But yeah, basically, anti-venom. And I think a big part of why I like him is that he just looks really cool. Because he's basically like Venom with the colours reversed. So he's white, like with a big black spider symbol and a cool black face mask.
Yeah.
And he's drawn by John Romita Jr. too, who's very good at just spiky things and like long, tenderly fingers. I mean, you were going to say something, Rob?
No. I was just going to say I do like the design of anti-Venom.
And basically, like, his power is pretty much the same as Venom, but also he can kind of like burn off the symbiote with his touch. And yeah, it's a big, cool fight. It's also, in kind of the larger sense, it's a really cool storyline because it's pulling together a lot of the plot points from what sounds like the Brand New Day era, which, Mick, have you heard of One More Day?
Have I heard of One More Day?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Spider-Man story.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You probably have. You just refuse to acknowledge it and it's been excised from your brain. Like all good people should do with that storyline.
I'm going to tell Mick about it. So Mick, you know Spider-Man?
I'm aware of his work, yes.
You know how for a time he was married to Mary Jane Watson?
Yes.
And then how he revealed his secret identity to the whole world.
Right, I didn't realise he'd done that in the
comic. He did that during a civil war.
Yeah,
all right.
And do you know how that got undone?
Go on.
So basically Aunt May ended up getting shot by an assassin. And instead of saying, you know what, she's literally 5,000 years old, maybe it's time to let go, Spider-Man saved her life and made the entire world forget his secret identity by making a deal with Mephisto to completely erase his marriage from history.
Right.
You know, Mephisto, the devil guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who you can absolutely trust to not have a twist in his deal.
See, the interesting thing about that was that Marvel kind of went, one more day, it happened. But, you know, we're not going to acknowledge it happened because we think Civil War should stay. But if one more day is real, then Civil War basically didn't happen.
Yeah, I think basically the solution they came up with is that Mephisto altered reality, but in the new reality, Aunt May was never shot, and instead Spider-Man just made a deal with Doctor Strange to make everyone forget.
What?
It was really bad, Mick.
It was awful.
Sorry, was that explanation meant to make me understand better?
No.
That's all right, then, because in that respect, it failed spectacularly.
Not understand so much as empathise. Understand why Spider-Man fans are always so sad.
I thought it was because they kept remembering the Amazing Spider-Man film franchise.
See, this was worse.
Wow. Was it worse than Spider-Man 3?
It was worse than the dance in Spider-Man 3.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
But that's impossible.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
I mean, again, Mick, Spider-Man sold his marriage to the devil.
I mean, that kind of activity, I'd just explain away with because comics.
I mean, it's the love of his life who he's going to spend the rest of his life with. And even though his Aunt May has told him, don't worry, it's okay. He's like, no, I must keep my Aunt May.
Also, I think the most important bit of context is this is treated as a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Because, for all the realism of Spider-Man, there's certain things that Marvel doesn't want you to accept, like, the grieving process and moving on.
Are you sure? Are you sure? Right. that this wasn't just Peter Parker's way of trading up Aunt May for the Marissa Tomei model.
I mean, maybe Spider-Man's made fools of us all. Anyway, the point I was going to make is that the storylines after that, where it's kind of like basically the Spider-Man reboot, those are actually pretty good. And New Ways to Die is kind of like the big culmination of a lot of them.
Yeah. So I've got to ask Andrew, how does Flash Thompson fit into all this? Because he's Venom as well.
He is indeed. So eventually the government are a bit like, wait a minute, Matt Gargan. You're eating people. That's probably bad. Give us that Venom symbiote. And instead they decided to make Flash Thompson, the kind of longtime Spider-Man fanboy, and also like ex-Marine. But then they just go randomly go like, you random man who likes Spider-Man, you can be Venom now.
Yeah. They basically did a super soldier on him, didn't they?
Yes, they turned him into Agent Venom, who is kind of like basically Venom, but a secret agent, but that's somewhat reductive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, so basically the thing with the Flash Thompson Venom is he's more an honourable mention for this, I think, mainly because I struggled to find like one single storyline that I would say this is the one you should go off and read. And like that's not because, you know, he's had bad storylines. He's actually had a very good series written by Rick Remender, but it's kind of, I don't know what to recommend apart from about like all 22 issues of that.
Yeah.
Because I was originally going to suggest kind of issues 18 to 21, which is sort of like the big culmination, where it's to fight the Savage Six, who are kind of his own version of the Sinister Six. But rereading that, I feel like it doesn't work that well if you don't have a lot of the backstory behind it. Because mainly, like, the big thing that makes it cool is you get kind of the first 18 issues or so of Flash basically trying to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And, like, doing not super well because he isn't Spider-Man. And this is finally the point where he just goes, actually, you know what? What if instead of trying to be Spider-Man, I'd just be Venom? And just starts, like, snapping necks and hurling knives and shooting all his guns.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been there, right?
I mean, this is where I get really confused about this whole Flash Thompson, Eddie Brock, symbiote love triangle. Because it is, right? See, Eddie is anti-Venom, but Flash is also anti-Venom, but they're both Venom as well. And somehow in the middle you've got the symbiote who can't decide between the two of them because the symbiote loves both of them, but also secretly kind of likes Peter Parker as well because they go way back.
If there are any mathematics professors listening who'd like to draw us a Venn diagram of this relationship...
Oh, no, it gets worse. It gets worse because Eddie has a son who... Yeah, I'm not going to go into that because his son is also somehow connected to the symbiotes.
Also not going to go into it for the very important reason that I don't actually like the new Venom series.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Because it deals with the god Null, which... It came out of, like, left field.
I would just like to put forward the idea that isn't Eddie Brock and the Symbiotes a great name for a band?
Yes.
And it kind of works because Eddie Brock has had, like, three different symbiotes.
Yeah.
Because he's been Venom, Anti-Venom, and Toxin.
Toxin?
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Who is... basically, the Venom symbiote grand blob child.
Yep. Toxin could be his death metal solo project, couldn't it?
And didn't Toxin kind of separate and go off and do its own thing without an actual host? Or was that a different one? I can't remember. Because the new series...
It's just the fog of your mind.
The new series has got some very, very bizarre additions to the symbiotes. There's one that's kind of gone off and started doing its own thing. There's another one that's being kept by Eddie Brock's son in the form of a dog.
are symbiotes going off and doing their own thing not kind of antithetical to the whole idea of a symbiote?
Yeah, but that doesn't, you know, they're not going to let that spoil a good storyline.
Yeah, don't let facts get in the way of comic book sales.
Oh, yeah. And also, you say a good storyline, Bob.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
A storyline.
Also, Flash and Eddie are no longer the only Venoms because there's that new one, Mania, is it? Or whatever she's called?
Well, that's not a Venom then, is it? That's a Mania.
No, no, she's got the symbiote now, so she's being trained by Flash to be a superhero.
I don't think she is anymore. Basically, she was introduced in, like, the second bit of the Venom series, which is written by Cullen Bunn. And, I mean, it's also pretty good. It's just, like... I mean, again, it's my recommendation is, yeah, just go read like 40-odd issues of a comic book. So she had a bit of the Venom symbiote that was possessed by a demon. Don't worry about it. But then Carnage stole it, I think.
Yeah, the Cult of Carnage. Oh, that's a whole different story. I'm not going into that. I don't think we've got the time.
Yeah, and again, Donny Cates and Brian Stegman's Venom, read the first arc in a bit, thought it was all right, but couldn't bother to keep up with it. And that's where our story ends.
I have to ask, that whole null thing, why?
I mean, the whole concept of a null god is kind of self-defeating, isn't it?
Would you say it's null and void?
I would.
Isn't he the god of the void or something like that?
Well, he would be, wouldn't he? Why does a void need a god?
I think it's because Donny Cates wants his own Thanos and so made what is somehow a character even more boring than Thanos. And do you know what that is? That's my null hypothesis.
Andrew is exactly right. Null is like one of the dullest villain characters, and I hesitate to use the term villain because, you know, in order to be a villain in anything, you have to have a certain degree of, let's say, force of character. Let's define it as that.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I'd also take umbrage at you using the term character.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you look at any of the better supervillains, there's always a reason for their actions, a reason for their behavior. There's, you know, they've got that kind of willpower behind their actions. Dr. Doom, for example, in his constant quests for power, you know, he's the king, the ruler, things like that.
Yep. Power and to defeat that fool Richards.
Yeah, and to defeat that fool Richards, who he blames for all the wrong things in his life, which is fine, right? He's got some drive, some ambition, some goal. But Null doesn't have any of that, except I'm bored. I'm the chairman of the board, so I'm going to go out and do stuff because I'm bored.
See, the problem is I've now done a complete 180 on Null. Now I really want him to be used in the MCU and they should get Iggy Pop to play him.
And head up rival band, Null and the Voidoids.
Yes, that's the plot in Venom 3. Eddie Brock has to defeat Null in the Battle of the Bands in order to save the Vec Center.
No.
Venom 3, Pitch Perfect 4.
No, because Null is basically kind of trapped at the center of the planet Clintar, which all the symbiotes are from. So it'd be Eddie and the symbiotes versus Null and the Clintars.
I mean, that's a bit of a naff band name, to be honest.
Yeah, but Null is a naff villain. So Eddie and the symbiotes works as a band name. Null and the Clintars is the kind of thing that some teenager who doesn't really understand metal would come up with.
Maybe it's a death metal duo, Null and Void.
What, like Simon and Garfunkel?
Yeah.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
You know, we could bring in Flash Thompson as Venom's agent.
Yes, because he is Agent Flash already, isn't he?
Anyway, since we have spent a bit of time bagging on Noel, which I was going to try and not do, but it's just such a juicy, juicy target. I will try and end things by also recommending another good Venom story, which is 2009 Sinister Spider-Man by Brian Reed with art by Chris Pachalo.
Yeah.
And it's a very fun miniseries because this is set during a period called Dark Reign, where Norman Osborn was kind of the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And as part of that, Venom, this is still the Matt Gargan version, just became like the official Spider-Man. And so it's this kind of like very dark comedy series.
Yeah.
About Matt Gargan being like beloved superhero Spider-Man. And then like beating up his enemies with the Biff Zap Pow. And then dragging them off to custody. And by custody, I mean his stomach.
Yep.
Okay.
Also, it's Chris Pachalo, who just does amazing art.
Well, you know, when you're fighting bad guys, you do work up an appetite. So he's kind of solving two problems at once, isn't he?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess if overcrowding in prisons is an issue, but by the time Venom's done with them, there's certainly less of them to fill up the space.
So three problems, you know?
He's doing his civic duty.
Yes. So anyway,
that's about all I've got. Eagle-brained listeners may kind of have noticed there was a distinct carnage-shaped hole in this selection of stories. That was deliberate. I'm kind of assuming we might, maybe when Venom 2 comes out, kind of come back for a more carnage-focused episode.
Well, they've just last year, was it? Towards the end of last year, they did the Carnage crossover event, didn't they?
I mean, look, there have been a lot of Carnage crossover events.
Yeah, I think it was like...
so many.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. They did that. So, yeah, for Venom 2, I think we should cover Carnage. But we were going to mention Null.
I mean, we already have, Rob.
True.
Yes.
True. If you want to know more about just how boring Null is, I would recommend Silver Surfer Black.
Well, that's got a disturbing cover image. I mean, if you want to know what going through customs is like after COVID.
Silver Surfer's doing his part.
Anyway, so much for ending on a positive note, but there we go. Professor of Black is actually a very good miniseries as well. So, I did it. I win. Anyway, if you've liked what you've listened to, you can find more of us at thegeekshow.com or .co.uk.
.co.uk.
You can find us at thegeekshow.co.uk. We're on iTunes, just wherever you get your podcasts.
That was the kind of mistake that a recently bonded symbiote would make.
I don't know what you're talking about. We're perfectly fine. I mean, I'm perfectly fine.
Which one do you think he is? Is he Agony or Phage or Lasher? I reckon he's Lasher.
I think he's a new one. I think he's in a yet unchristened symbiote. Slosher.
How did you know about my Friday night plans?
He's called Slosher, and he takes out his victims by doing big, wet Alsatian face licks.
Again, Marvel, we are available for hire.
the Friday Night Symbiote, but Slosher.
Whether you're a major comics publisher or just a listener who happens to like what we say, you can help support us by visiting our Patreon and chucking in just as little as a dollar a month to help us keep the lights on and keep doing this thing we love. So, that's it from us. Until next time, I've been Andrew.
I've been Mick.
And I've been Rob.
So, until next time, so long, and thanks for listening.